Excellent.
All right, well, I want to welcome the new people. I gave you cards. That's the spiritual checklist. And on the top is the site experiencethebigbook.org. And I think there are 301 podcasts now and 77 thoughts. I go through the whole book, so if you're new and you want to study the big book, you can study it with me by listening. And it's up to you. It's a way to carry the message. Before we begin, I'm going to ask God, God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, the big book, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Help me to carry the message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Now, on Wednesday night, if you can join us, for those who have never done a step four, we're going to look at the specific instructions on resentment. And this Wednesday is especially powerful because we're going to see how to be free of anger. Anybody want that? And it's four paragraphs that if you follow and do what they say, you will be free of anger forever. Whenever you get angry, you do these instructions and you'll be free of anger. So that's Wednesday night at 7:30. And you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and Joe and Charlie, and Steps, and everything I could listen to in AA for years. That's the only reason I know what I know. It's not for me. And I never really heard anybody talk about those paragraphs. They're kind of hidden. But they talk about the fourth column, what's wrong with your mistakes, and they talk about the first three columns, but the freedom from anger is four paragraphs. So join us on Wednesday night. I feel passionate about it, can you tell? Ed's not here, I'm taking his place. And then on Saturday, we finished step 10, and we're gonna start looking at the instructions on what we do each day to pray and meditate so we can serve God and others. So we're on page 86 on Saturday, and we're on page 66 on Wednesday night. And tonight, we're finishing Bill's story. And I spent, this is our fourth session just on Bill's story. And I have a buddy, Bruce, who he's probably listening, and told me that somebody that he recommended the site said it's amazing I could spend so long on one story, but they thought it was good. I think tonight's going to be especially powerful stuff. This story is not studied enough. It really puts my alcoholism in perspective. It gives me hope. It gives me instructions. And if these things that we're going to read about had never happened, we wouldn't be here today. And Bill W. was not a saint. He had a lot of things wrong with him, a lot of character defects. He was the first to admit it. But God chose him, and he's choosing people today. And he had such a powerful experience we're going to read about tonight that he couldn't help but serve God and trying to help other alcoholics. And it was that passion. If he didn't have that passion, then we wouldn't be here. He wouldn't have gone 6 months to meet Dr. Bob, and they wouldn't have gone to A number three, and you know, etc. It's similar, it's not the same. I'm not saying it is. Nobody call in or write me or report me to New York, but Joe and Charlie made the point that what we're gonna read about tonight that happened to Bill is similar to what's described in the New Testament about Saul riding to Damascus and getting knocked, as Joe and Charlie like to say, on an ass, knocked on his ass. And then God talked to him about changing and becoming a new person and a new name and spreading the message. And I think Paul did a good job, and I think Bill W. did a good job. And we owe a lot to him. Now, Jimmy's not here, so if he listens, he can get mad at me. But I'm gonna reread page 13 that we covered last week because it's so powerful. And then I won't go into it in great detail. We'll never get home. And that was supposed to be funny. And then we're gonna cover 14 and 15 and 16. All right, nobody laughs. It's a tough crowd tonight. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Now, the reason, try to remember this, he's going in the alcohol into the hospital, he's on it, and he's drunk. He's been drinking. And then read what happens to him in the hospital and see if this isn't a profound change in his character. Something happened to this man. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of DTs. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. So he's taking step three. I admitted to, for the first time, that myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch, 6 and 7, 4 and 5. I've not had a drink since. My schoolmate visited me, Ebby, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. So he's doing step five. We made a list of people I had hurt, toward whom I resented. Steps 8 and 9, I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Anybody think this is powerful stuff? Powerful stuff. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense with us become uncommon sense. Powerful words. I was to sit quietly when in doubt. Anybody ever sit quietly? Asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. That's something I try to do. Don't do it perfectly. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my requests bore my usefulness to others. So this, he's doing steps 10 and 11 here. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. And this this last podcast for last week, I'll be putting out this next week. My friend promised when these things were done, this is the great promise, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Anybody want that? All right, how do you get it? He tells you, belief in the power of God, anybody can do that, enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Steps 4 through 9 are to establish, steps 10 and 12 to maintain. And there, it's essential. It's essential to have enough willingness, honesty, and humility. You can't have 80% willingness to make it, because the 20% that's unwilling eventually becomes the 80%. And you can't be a little bit humble, because your ego will rebuild. And you can't be halfway honest, because that won't work. You have to be completely honest. And so now we finished with this paragraph, simple but not easy. It's a simple program, but it's not easy. Why? Because you have to pay a price. Remember, there's no free lunch. Anybody ever hear that? So here's the bill that you have to pay if you want to have a new relationship with your Creator, and you want a way of life that's powerful and help and full of joy and service. You have to destroy your self-centeredness. So we should give this to everybody when they come in the room. Fine. You want to get better? Here's the bill. Pass out a check. And they'll look at it like I'm crazy. Destruction of self-centeredness. Anybody want that? But we don't know how to do it, do we? Well, we're reading that. We're going to read that. We're reading that on Wednesday night, the instructions on how to work steps 4 through 9, which destroy your self-centeredness. But the destruction of self-centeredness, what does it mean? How do you do that? You must, notice the word, I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. So if I'm disturbed, what I need to do is turn to the Father of light and ask him to help me get undisturbed. Father of light, I think, is from the book of James. I quoted scripture at one meeting, and some guy got upset and told me I was violating the traditions. And that's okay. It's okay with me, and he didn't come back. So I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. Anybody like that? It's powerful, isn't it? Now, here's the problem. I forget that. Anybody forget that? Yeah, when we get into our self-will and we're all worked up, we forget. Okay, stop. Well, isn't that what the serenity prayer is? God, go to God to get serenity, peace of mind, so then you can see how to react to things. Isn't that what the St. Francis prayer, which is in the back of the card, is all about? How to be a channel of God's peace so you can bring love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, and joy. And it says here, my goal is to seek to comfort, not to be comforted, and to understand, then to be understood. Powerful stuff. I meditate on this every day. To love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, and it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. So it all ties together. So now we're going to pick up, and it says, these were revolutionary and drastic proposals. So what was revolutionary and drastic proposals? Well, it seems pretty drastic when you actually think about it. But and revolutionary because this wasn't even written then. But the proposals, are they the steps? Or is that the idea that you turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all? But I think he's talking about the 12 proposals, the 12 steps. But the moment, and here's the key, I fully accepted them. I fully accepted them. The effect was electric. Now, I've seen a lot of people come in and they read the steps and they don't want to fully accept them. They're not 100% committed to change, not 100% committed to changing their lives. But once you give up and surrender completely and you're done and you've made a decision in step three, then you're going to do the work. But if you haven't fully accepted them, you're not going to do the work. And the effect was electric. Anybody feel good when they gave up? Anybody feel that sense of relief, that moment of defeat when I asked God to help me? I felt better right away just when I got up because I felt like I had given my burden to someone else and that they would help me and I wasn't doing it on my own anymore. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I had ever known. So after he's describing how he did this work in the hospital and how he's changed. He had a sense of victory over what? His self-centeredness. But you're going to see, because I want you to take this paragraph and we're going to compare it to the paragraph on the next page to see how this all ties together. I don't know how it worked out that like on 24 it says you can't stop drinking, and on 25 it says there's a solution. And here on page 14 he's going to tell us about a sense of victory, peace and serenity as I had never known. He had utter confidence in who? In God. Because remember he said he had confidence in himself when you read the story. I felt lifted up as though a great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. Now remember when he was arguing with Ebby and he didn't want to have the God idea, remember? He said he built this icy intellectual mountain that he lived in the shadow of that prevented him from the light in God. And then eventually it melted and now he's on the other side. And he says, God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. Now, we read these promises at other meetings. We don't read here because it takes up a lot of time. And besides, there are promises throughout the book. We just read a couple here. But it says, suddenly we realize God is doing for us what we cannot do for yourself. Anybody ever heard that? Yeah. Well, it's suddenly. But it could be gradual to get there, but it's always sudden when you realize that. And his impact on me was sudden and profound. Now it says at the end of the ninth step promises, they can occur quickly or slowly. Have you ever heard that? Mm-hmm. But they will always occur. And Sandy Beach makes the point that when you read the promises, these are things that just happen. Well, whenever they happen, it's always suddenly. And you still have spiritual experiences when you're in AA. You have them all the time. And for me, a spiritual experience is when I change my mind. And when I see that I'm wrong and I'm willing to be open-minded to somebody else's opinion. And don't worry, I have somebody at home that helps me with that all the time. I don't worry, she'll never listen. I told her the other day, I said, honey, please don't listen to the podcast because she says, I don't listen to you anyway. So there you go. We get along great, but you know, it is what it is. And so he came to most men gradually, but he came to Bill suddenly. And a lot of people think that this paragraph is why we're here today. That he had a sudden, powerful spiritual experience that he could not help from doing the things that he did. He could not help but do it. It's not the same, but I can't stop doing these meetings. If nobody comes, I'm still going to do them. Because somebody might come that I can help. I feel that passionately about it. For a moment, I was alarmed. So he's alarmed because he's really sensed a change and called his friend the doctor to ask if I were still sane. He listened in wonder. Well, I'm not going to ask him if I'm still sane. That takes a lot of guts for somebody, but that was a joke. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, this is Dr. Silkworth in the hospital, and this is the guy who told his wife about a few months before that he was going to be locked up, remember, or go crazy, and there was no hope for him. And I think that's page 7. And then on page 8, Bill says he's completely defeated. Then he goes around for a while, dying. And then God sends Hebe Thatcher to him in November 1934 to Brooklyn, and they sit in his kitchen. They still have the table and all that from where they met, and I think it's at Stepping Stones. Finally, he shook his head, saying, "Something has happened to you I don't understand, but you better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." And the good doctor now sees many men who have such experiences. Now, this is an experience. It's called, they call it a spiritual experience. We call it an awakening now. He knows that they are real. I know they're real because I see people that have changed. I see them when they come in. I see them years later celebrating birthdays. I remember when they came in. And I hope that I've changed. People tell me I have. And we should continue to change. Remember, a sobriety date will, right? And so, and they're real. And isn't that how the newcomer is supposed to know that there's a power, believe that there's a power greater than himself that can restore him to sanity? Because he becomes to believe that because he sees the people in the room and he hears their experiences. And that's what we're supposed to share. It says on page 29 or something, it says when we tell our story, we're to tell about how we established our relationship with God so people can see that it can happen to them. While I lay in the hospital, here's the deal. He goes in there and getting DTs, right? He's a self-centered person. A few days later, he's laying in the hospital thinking that there are thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what I've been so freely given to me. Isn't that something? And I wrote here, I don't get, I receive. I don't earn anything here. I receive. It's not a self-help program. It's all God. What we do is get out of the way. He received, we receive. It's freely given to me. The promises, everything in this book comes from God. But we have to seek him, right? God can and will if he were sought. And then we have to do the work to get out of the way so we turn in all things to the Father light. And really the steps are how we learn to destroy our self-centeredness and turn away from ourselves so we can receive his power. And remember, we are given spiritual power tools. Did anybody, do you know where your power kit is of spiritual tools? And it has directions on it. And it says these tools will work if plugged into the proper socket. And what I did, I took the power tools and I plugged them in the Michael socket. They didn't work. When I plugged them in the God socket, they worked. And isn't that what the program's all about each day? Unplugging from the Michael socket to the God socket. And it sounds so easy, but it's hard to do in the beginning. And then it gets easier the longer you're sober because you don't like the Michael socket. You don't feel good. And so he said, perhaps I could help some of them. Notice what they say. They're hopeless alcoholics who might be glad. Why wouldn't they all be glad? Because some people just don't want to give up. He could help some of them. Why not all of them? Now, who does this book help? The people who want it and then the people who do it. And if you don't want it, you don't do it. AA says that's fine. Bill didn't say he's going to be mad at the people who don't want it and the people he can't help. It's just, that's the way it is. Remember, it says that working with others, if they don't want what you have, go on to somebody else. Don't waste your time. And that's why this is such a bad disease, because people won't give up. They won't surrender. They won't see that they have two alternatives, an alcoholic death or a spiritual life. They think there's a third door. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Isn't that part of the 12th step? Now, how do you demonstrate the principles in all our affairs? You know, you live the St. Francis prayer, right? You practice love, patience, tolerance, kindness, consideration, compassion. And here's the deal. Particularly was it imperative, that means it's really important, to work with others as he had worked with me. faith without works is dead. Anybody ever heard that before? Mm-hmm. And how apparently true for the alcoholic, because if we don't do the works, we die of alcoholism. And if we don't do the works, our faith is dead, because it means if I'm not working, I'm not receiving God's direction in my life, right? I'm not turning away. Remember on page 84 where they're giving instructions about what to do each day? They say, resolutely turn your thoughts to others. Get out of yourself. So if you're having a bad day tomorrow and you're upset about something, just say, who can I help right now? Who can I turn my thoughts away from all this? And maybe it's even just doing your job. Just doing the next thing that's in front of you. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect, notice the word perfect in here, we say progress, not perfection, but failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. You get the picture here? If you're not doing the deal, then you're not going to be able to survive the life. You're not going to be able to handle life, and then you're going to drink. You're not going to be able to handle your emotions because you're not going to be spiritually fit. Remember, it said yesterday, we read it, that if you're in fit spiritual condition, you will react sanely to alcohol, right? And your problem will be removed. And it says, if he did not work, he would surely drink. And I wrote, work for others. We're not talking about, you know, digging ditches. They're talking about working for others. He would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. We thought it's just like that. And powerful stuff. And if you're not sponsoring somebody, that's selfish. If you've been here a while, you've worked the steps, and you're not sponsoring somebody, that's very selfish. And I hear people, well, I might screw it up. And you're not going to screw it up. They have alcoholism. And the thing is, it's just excuses. It's just excuses. It's excuses. And eventually, that kind of thinking may keep you from being spiritually fit. So I encourage you, if you're not working with someone, find somebody to work with. And I guarantee you, no matter what happens, you'll get more out of it than they will. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to solution their problems. They just abandoned themselves. This is what they were going to do. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I don't think he ever really worked again. Now here's the contrast between the great victory. The effect is electric, peace and serenity, utter confidence. He's at the top of the mountain, right? And then now, look what happened to him. See, you don't get, things just don't get better right away. It says, I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Notice, save the day, saved him. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. When talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set to my seat. You see, it doesn't matter what happened to the other man. He was lifted up. Why? Because he's serving God. He's doing God's will. He's trying to help others. He's practicing love. It is a design for living that works in rough going, and that's what they talk as the steps. That's what he introduces the 12 and 12s and say that's what the steps are. Now, the thing is, if he hadn't, he told Lois, this was right before he went to Akron and met Dr. Bob, that he'd been sober 6 months and nobody had gotten sober. Hadn't helped a single person. And she says, but Bill, you're sober. And then he remembered that in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel in May of 1935 when he was going to drink after the business deal went bad, right? And he thought the bar was a good idea. And he was only going to have one drink, right? Just one drink. And as he begins to go across the threshold, fear gripped him and he shivered. That was God. And he said, I'm going to find an alcoholic to talk to. And he found Dr. Bob, and we're here today. And because he had worked the steps and he'd stayed close to God. God was with him in the lobby of that Mayflower Hotel. He wasn't alone. So if you're thinking about drinking and your mind says, bad idea, that's God. That's how it works. And when he told Dr. Silkworth nobody was getting sobered, he said, stop preaching to him. He was preaching about his spiritual change. He said, tell him what happened to you. Tell him what it was like and what happened and what you're like now. That's where we get that from. He says, we commenced to make many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, of which is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, and you can sense that in this room. We have a camaraderie, we have a joy, even under pressure and difficulty. I've seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. That's another line I hadn't seen after, I've read this a million times. Feet in the path that really goes somewhere. So if you want to thoroughly follow their path because it goes somewhere. Now, if you follow your path, it may go nowhere. And so it has to be their path. It has to be the path that really goes somewhere. And AA doesn't say that they have the only way or this and that, but they just say, if you don't have a path that's going somewhere, try this path and tell us what happens. And I've seen the most impossible domestic situations, right? Anybody here have impossible domestic situations? Anybody not have them? If you don't, you're in the wrong room. You're probably not an alcoholic. Feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. Anybody have feuds and bitterness? I've seen men, in fact, you can have a lot of that even when you're sober. Go to a business meeting, AA business meeting. I've seen, yeah, there's something else. I'm not well enough, I can't go. We don't have business meetings at this group. That's why we get along. I've seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. I can see it in the room. I know people that this has happened to. It happened to me. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There's scarcely, look at this promise, there's scarcely any form of trouble or misery which has not been overcome among us. You can survive your son dying. You can survive anything, and you can survive it with serenity with God. Isn't that what it says on page 67? That we can handle calamity with surrender if we stay close to him and do his work well and let him demonstrate through us what he can do. You can handle anything. Isn't that a great promise? Anybody have calamity? Calamity is only in your mind. It's the way you see something. So God gives you serenity to handle the situation. Isn't that what the serenity prayer is all about? So in AA you learn that you don't have problems, you have situations. And then with God, you look at the situation unemotional and realize, and he helps you react to it in a positive way. And it can be anything, because that's what I asked God when I found out when my son died. I said, God, you're going to have to help me. Help me through this. Carry me through this. I'm going to stay close to you. And there were people in my house within an hour. And so it doesn't mean you won't be sad, and you won't have situations that are sad, but you'll be able to handle them with serenity. That may be the greatest promise in the big book. It says, now here's another one. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. Powerful. And if you don't seek, you won't find. Now, I've heard it said that the newcomer is the most important person at the meeting. I've never understood that. I don't know what they're talking about. It's not in the book. Maybe I understand, but we're all important here. But what we want to do is, for the newcomer, is show them that this is a fellowship they will want so that they'll want to participate in it. And so when you go to meetings, see if somebody's new and they're listening to what's going on. Are you giving them the message? Are you giving them the message of recovery, the message of hope? Are you telling them what happened to you and what you did and how your life's changed? And so we want to have the fellowship that they will seek, but I wrote, if you're not seeking, you won't find. And then I wrote, what fellowship are you seeking? You know, what kind of fellowship are you seeking? Now at the end of page 164, it says, we hope we shall meet you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Not the spirit of the fellowship, which is like you're happy, you like the group, you're having fun, but the fellowship of the Spirit, where everybody's together studying and seeking and trying to find God in their lives and helping each other. And so what kind of fellowship? I heard the speaker say that the people you're hanging around with now are the person you'll become in 5 years. And that really made a lot of sense. So I try to hang around people who want to do the deal. All my close friends are in AA. And I try to hang around people who I think are trying to spiritually guide and lead me and encourage me. An alcoholics in his cups is an unlovely creature. I'm sure I was in my cup at one point. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic, and it's very sad. I mean, we've lost members of this group, and it's a tragic disease. And we're happy here, and we joke around, but this is really a fatal disease. Very low recovery rate. People think cancer is a bad disease. Alcoholism is a bad disease. And I was a cancer doctor, and most of my patients got better. But alcoholism is a very small number. Very few people ever make it to AA. I think only 1 in 10 makes an AA, and then 1 of those 10 will be sober 5 or 10 years. So it's like 0.01. It's not good news. And now we have the drugs, and so you could die quicker. It takes a long time to die of alcohol, but you can die quicker with drugs and alcohol. It's very dangerous. Our society is such a crisis. So anytime we can help somebody, especially when the young people come, I always reach out to them. I see my son and say, let's help this one. That's why I started the meeting, so people could do the steps so they didn't have to die in their car. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it. I suppose I'll be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity, but just underneath, there's deadly earnestness. Remember, with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be thorough and fearless from the start. And here it is. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. We're going to die if we're not working this in us and through us all the time, and that's steps 10 and 11. How we inventory, we stay close to God in conscious contact all day, how we carry a vision of His will for us, how we react when we're agitated or doubtful, what we ask for in the morning when we wake up, what we do when we have indecision, and what we do when we think about our day. And those are the instructions we're going to be reading on Saturday. Just 3 pages, but if you follow those instructions, your life will be better. Most of us feel we need to look further for utopia. This is the utopia for us. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friends, and this is really powerful stuff. I get emotional when I read this stuff. Each day, my friends, simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Powerful. And then it says, died January 24th, 1971. And what we're reading is the events in 1934. This man was dying. If you haven't read the whole story, read it. He was dying, and he lived 37 years. So if that isn't an example, that's why the story is at the beginning. It's an example of hope, what can happen if you do what he did. And then the rest of the book, notice the next line, there is a solution. So if you're reading the book, you get to this point, you say, I want to read the solution, right? Okay. Talked enough. Thanks for the new people for coming. Hope you got something out of it. We'll open it up.